Good morning. We are back, Bostopian News with Evan George, to go over the recent controversy involving White Stadium and its proposed renovations, which will transform it into a, to quote the Wu administration, state-of-the-art facility, and also bring a professional soccer team to the heart of Boston. And what I find most fascinating about this proposal is my support of it, because I have always hated the public financing of stadiums. Always. You can almost never find a circumstance where it actually truly ends up benefiting the area where it's located and ends up just doing nothing more than subsidizing some billionaire family that owns a franchise. Nothing else. There's always fake promises about all the jobs, all the economic revenue it'll bring in, but really it is about subsidizing billionaires. However, if there was ever an example of a good way of doing this, I think it would be this project. And I am sure a lot of that has to do with, we are talking about a women's soccer league. This is not like the NFL, where there are these massive power brokers who have strangleholds over major cable outfits, and just because of the nature of their networks, this massive social relations that they can leverage. Instead, the NWSL, which is the National Women's Soccer League, it was established just in 2012, and it seems like there's been multiple versions of this. So this came about from the Women's Professional Soccer League, which ran from 2007 to 2012, which that also was predated by the Women's United Soccer Associations from 2001, 2003. So like, what it seems like is this league has struggled to get off the ground and therefore would be more susceptible to this type of a deal with a city. And of course, we're going to get into what the specifics of the deal are in a little bit. And it's even funnier when I go to the league's website and just to try to figure out like how many teams there are, because I'm getting different things from different sources. So their official teams actually already names Boston. Now, there was a team. Boston had the Boston Breakers, but they fell apart. But they currently have Boston listed as NWSL team's official sites. And when you go to the Boston site, it is all about this new stadium. And you can even already buy merch, despite the fact that I don't think there's even a team name. It's just like NWSL Boston, which is really funny that you can already buy merch for something that a judge just ruled on 2 days ago. But hey, that's the biz. But now let's go back. Let's look at the history. Let's look at the deal. And we'll try to figure out how is it that a communist has come to support this proposal. Originally called West Roxbury Park, the public park was renamed to honor Benjamin Franklin in 1885. Yes, that is why we call it Franklin Park. And the design of this new park, 527 acres, was from Frederick Law Olmsted Sr. And that name, Olmsted, should ring a bell for everyone, because chances are, even if you have never set foot in Franklin Park, you have set foot in a park designed by Olmsted, most notably Central Park, New York City. But it does appear that in the mid to late 1800s or the mid to late 19th century, depending on how you like it phrased, I have had a special request to try to use the hundreds to clear up confusion, so I'll try to do my best to do that in the future, that if you wanted a park during that period, there was really only one person to go to, and that was Frederick Law Olmsted. He basically did every major park in the country. And Franklin Park is really part of a much larger nine-park network that we refer to as the Emerald Necklace. Remember that phrase? It's going to come into play later when we discuss the lawsuit. And this is a 1,100-acre chain of parks. And while the overall design of these nine parks is attributed still to Frederick Olmsted, he did not do each individual park. Like, this Emerald Necklace has as part of it the Boston Common, which was obviously in the early 1600s, then the Public Garden, 1837. he was not responsible for really the first three, being the Common, the Public Garden, and Commonwealth Avenue Mall, but he gets credited for the overall whole system, which, yes, includes Franklin Park, the Arnold Arboretum, Jamaica Pond and JP, Olmsted Park, go figure, the Riverway in Fenway, the Back Bay Fens, so on and so forth. And the area that White Stadium sits on is called the Playstead. To give you a quote from Frederick about that, the Playstead is designed to be used for the athletic recreation and education of the city's schoolboys, for occasional civic ceremonies and exhibitions, and for any purpose likely to draw spectators and crowds. So you can keep that quote in mind as we continue to discuss White Stadium's future. And now, jumping forward in time, White Stadium, formerly known as the George Robert White Schoolboy Stadium, was erected in 1945 and cost $2 million to build, with the first game being played in 1949 between Roxbury Memorial and Boston Latin School, which can hold 10,000 people. And who is this man that this stadium is named after? Well, George Robert White. He was born in 1847 in Lynnfield, Massachusetts, and was a citizen of Boston for most of his life, where apparently he began working for the Weeks and Potter Drug Company, working his way up to president. And I'm not going to look too much into that company. I just have to assume if you're a pharmaceutical company in the early 1900s, you probably were up to some shady stuff, but that's okay because it was all legal back then. Anyway, upon his death in 1922, he created an endowment of over $5 million to the city of Boston to finance, quote, works of public beauty and utility throughout the city. And his sole request was to have $50,000 of the funds set aside for the creation of a memorial in his memory. Yes, if there's one thing, quote unquote, philanthropists love more, is to create monuments to their own generosity. And that memorial is, I believe, referred to as the Angel in the Boston Public Garden, and was newly renovated in 2016 for the cost of $750,000. So next time you're in the public garden and you come across the Angel, maybe throw a penny in as thanks for the creation of White Stadium. And as I mentioned before, the first football games took place October 1st, 1949, and it seems for about the next 20 years, the stadium continued as a place for recreation for Boston's school children, owned and operated by the city of Boston. Now, in 1970, there was a proposal, and I'm reading from you a Boston Globe article on February 3rd, 1970, to convert White Stadium. The Boston Redevelopment Authority, soon to be referred to as the BPDA, yesterday proposed conversion of White Stadium as a site for the Patriots after Harvard again rejected the Pro Football Club's request to use Harvard Stadium. Jumping forward, knowledgeable people who have inspected the facility say it can be enlarged to 50,000 seats for less than $5 million. They point out that in the past 2 years, Tampa, Florida, and Memphis, Tennessee, have constructed football stadiums seating in the vicinity of $50,000 for less than $4 million. And how this plan would be financed would be the Boston Redevelopment Authority would put forward a bond at about $4 million and then charge the Patriots a lease of about $150,000 per year for 30 years to get that money back. And here we already see kind of the types of deals that I really hate that we see today, basically being public financed, upfronts all of the money, and then these wealthy sports owners are basically given like 0% interest loans decades to pay it back. And even then, they generally don't always pay the full figure back. And even in this article, it says, quote, further revenues could be derived from concessions and other rentals. And this appears to still have been one of the better plans because I think the public still would own the building, but we are allowing the Patriots to rent it for 30 years. And I doubt very, very highly that simultaneously the city of Boston would have access to this stadium, though I don't really know. The important takeaway here, the Patriots almost came to right in the heart of Boston for their stadium. We can discuss and debate if that is for better or for worse, that they did not. And something else historically of note, actually 1 year previous to this, in 1969, July 27th to be exact, the Black Panther Party held a rally in White Stadium. It took place Sunday at 2 p.m., the topics being fascism, community control of police, breakfast program number 2, liberation school, and medical program for community. With the flyer advertisement being signed, All Power to the People, Boston Chapter, Black Panther Party. And this flyer was actually part of a presentation by the group that wants to finance the new reconstruction of White Stadium. And I always just find it hilarious how much cities now, you know, highlight the role of the Black Panthers, or they highlight the civil rights protests, the 1960s and 70s as part of their history's legacy, or universities that highlight the same thing, when all of those institutions absolutely hated the Black Panthers, absolutely hated civil rights activists, and did everything they could to brutalize, terrorize them, and make their lives absolutely horrible. But here we are, decades later, and they are held up as something to commemorate and memorialize. Absolutely, go F yourselves. And now I'll just speak in generalities, because the history of White Stadium really mirrors the history of major cities across the United States. And I think if you've been listening regularly, you should be listening weekly, then you have some sense of the deterioration of cities which took place in the post-World War II era. So we'll just label that time period from the 1950s to really about the 1990s. And during that time, we had the massive public subsidized creation of the suburbs, wealth drain out of cities, lack of investment into cities that were led to be into massive disrepair, and White Stadium was no different. So it started to really deteriorate along with the city around it throughout the 60s and 70s and 80s. There was then a fire, which it's actually really hard for me to figure out what the exact date was. It's really just referenced multiple times. I think it occurred in 1998. But a fire destroyed the interior of the East Grandstand, which I think to some extent is still unused to this day. So that was in 1998. And the first major effort to try to renovate or reimagine White Stadium took place a little over 10 years ago in 2013. And reading from you, a Bay State Banner article from July 2nd, 2013, proposal to renovate Franklin Park's White Stadium draws favorable reaction. The White Stadium renovation project is the brainchild of John Fish, owner of Suffolk Construction Company and founder of Boston Scholar Athletes, a program that supports high school students. Fish has promised a $5 million investment out of his own pocket to kick off the project. White Stadium, which is now managed by the Boston Public Schools, is used for football games on Friday nights and track and field meets in the spring. The proposed project has two phases. The first includes upgrading the stadium, creating additional parking lots, and expanding the outdoor basketball area with additional courts and lights for more seasonable use as a Boston Neighborhood Basketball League site. And the total cost for all of these phases would be just about $45 million. And at the time, this had the support of Mayor Thomas Menino and Councilor Tito Jackson. And while I mentioned that the facility is owned by Boston Public Schools, I'll be honest, that seems to be a little bit contested. Same time period, June 24th, 2013, the great Adrian Walker, in his article, "They Plan to Restore Franklin Park's Jewel," he writes, It says something about the state of neglect that until last week, no one was even sure who owned the place. The school department, which has managed it for decades, thought it held the title to it, but actually it does not. It is owned by the George Robert White Fund, a charity that supports city-controlled projects. Regardless, there was a George Robert White Stadium conceptual study done in December of 2013. It's almost 200 pages. However, would it shock you that 1 year later, now July 4th, 2014, we have in the Jamaica Plain Gazette titled, "Renovation of White Stadium on Hold" by Peter Shanley. The renovation of Franklin Park's White Stadium has been delayed and might even be canceled, according to a mass email from the Franklin Park Coalition. And why did it stall out? Well, going forward again by Adrian Walker, this time in August 6th of 2015, back in the Globe, he writes, "The White Stadium project eventually stalled out. There wasn't any one reason. Mayor Thomas M. Menino, who strongly supported it, left office before it could win final approval. Neighbors had concerns, mostly about parking and access." Ding, ding, ding. Just want to conclude the paragraph, though. Marty Walsh likes the idea in principle, but chokes on the potential price tag, which I will add is somewhere around like $40 to $45 million. Meanwhile, the Olympic project came to consume Fish's time and energy. Thank God that initiative failed. Once a priority, White Stadium became an afterthought. Just want to read you that sentence again. Neighbors had concerns mostly about parking and access. And we're going to get into it more when we discuss the lawsuit, but I cannot emphasize enough that if you're trying to figure out someone's motivation for being against a project, almost always it'll be parking. And many times they will explicitly say it. I remember when I was able to attend the Columbia Savin Hill Civic Association meetings, because I bartend part-time, that's become a lot more difficult the last year or two. And the small little restaurant just wanted to get our thumbs up to have takeout. And the first complaint I heard from someone was, well, now people are going to be driving to your restaurant to park there to get takeout, and that's going to make it harder to park. And almost every new development, someone, their number one priority, because everything in their life is perfect. The only major concern that they care about is their ability to park wherever they want. Doesn't matter if it results in people having to sleep on the street. No, 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 I want my parking spot. And jumping forward a little bit, and I will discuss, you know, the logistics of the plan and the lawsuit. September 27th, 2023, Adam Gaffin from Universal Hub, titled "Roxbury Jamaica Plain Residents Want Assurances Their Streets Won't Be Clogged by Suburbanites Driving Into Town to See Women's Soccer at White Stadium." Second paragraph in a Zoom meeting, however, skeptical residents on both the Jamaica Plain and Roxbury sides of the stadium doubted people would pay to park and ride shuttle vans or take the Orange Line to Green Street and then make a Euro-style march into the stadium and instead flood their streets looking for some free on-street parking. And they were not having it. Quote, "We will not accept any traffic exiting from the park onto Severs Street," Roxbury resident Luis Elsa said. Going so far as to threaten legal action otherwise. Keep in mind Luis Elsa in a moment. But again, highlighting my point that 95% of the time, it is simply about parking. And this, again, it's really not to blame the individuals who have these concerns. No one likes traffic. Nobody enjoys having to circle multiple blocks, having to drive farther and farther away from your home to find a parking spot. A lot of this has to do with policy decisions that were made decades ago. I'm pretty sure I talked about it in a recent episode. There's a great book called Fighting Traffic, if you want to learn the history about it. But yes, cars basically ruined all American cities, and we are dealing with that consequences. However, I will never prioritize parking over other considerations. I'm sorry, all of us, myself included, as somebody who owns both a car and a motorcycle, need to begin transitioning in cities that do not have personal vehicle dependency as the pinnacle of how we make our policies and our development. It simply just cannot continue to be allowed. And to further make this point, Bay State Banner again, Tanisha Pott, residents voice concern over White Stadium proposal, reading about halfway through. "Other residents worried about parking nightmares, traffic jams, and other commuting woes that might arise if thousands of people pour in and out of the stadium for big-time events. Residents living close to the stadium said they were afraid people will park on their street and are demanding resident-only parking along those areas." Quote, "Unless there's an ironclad execution plan for transportation for 20 weekends of every year, it will be just highly destructive to our quality of life. This is not a joke for us. It's not theoretical," said Walt Pollard, who lives near the stadium. Anyway, Now let's take a look at this proposal, and it is brought forth by the Boston Unity Soccer Partners LLC, who sent a project notification form to the city that outlines the group's plans to redevelop White Stadium in Franklin Park. And to go through some of the logistics behind it, this will be one of the rare cases where I am in support of the Boston Globe editorial board. And I'm going to read from their July 21st piece, 2023. Boston student athletes deserve a first-class playing field. Plan to revamp the White Stadium deserves a thumbs up. And I mean, if me and the Globe editorial board are behind an idea, it's probably a good one. Reading from the piece now. The 78-year-old stadium with its metal bleachers down at the heels, locker rooms, and peeling paint is an embarrassment to the city and sends a message to its student athletes that the city just doesn't care or hasn't cared enough over the years. Skipping forward, the Boston Unity Soccer Partners, an all-female management team, is proposing to invest some $30 million in the site in return for 20 annual play dates from which there will be their entry in the National Women's Soccer League beginning in 2026. At their filing in the city, the group proposes to renovate the current 10,000-seat grandstand and add 1,000 additional retractable seats for soccer game days. And if you've ever been to like a large size or even a medium size gym auditorium, then you kind of have seen what those retractable seats look like. I mean, they like almost fold in on themselves. And so how I think it would work is those additional seats would retract out for additional seating and go on the track. And then, you know, when it's time for track and field, they very easily just kind of pull in. Also provide state-of-the-art locker rooms, a refurbished track expanded to 8 lanes for BPS use, and a new and presumably less lumpy natural grass field with an underground irrigation system. The filing also includes plans for an adjoining space called The Grove, which is kind of like just outside of White Stadium, that could be used for concessions on game days and community events virtually year-round. Quote, the opportunities for new and enhanced community programming that will come with stadium improvements alongside our team's soccer games will add to the vibrancy, activation, and use of the park, said Jennifer Epstein, who's the managing partner of the venue. And now what I want to talk about is the usage of the stadium. And this is probably ultimately why I support it. Because it's not just that it still maintains in control of the city, but really this sports team is simply renting from us use of the stadium for 20 days out of the year. And then they also kind of add in may conduct one practice on the field during the week prior to the home game. So let's just make that 40. They are renting from us 40 days out of the year for 365, quick math, 345 days. It's entirely Boston's programming, Boston's decision. They get 40 days out of the year, half of which are game days. And in return, they are putting forward the capital investment to make these improvements. And what will the outside look like? The Grove. So during game days, quote, during game days, the Grove will be arranged so that it supports the fan experience as food and beverage concession component of the stadium. It will be oriented to function inside the ticket line. So basically, the Grove itself will be blocked off during those 20 games per year where they'll have, I think I saw like a beer garden, you know, pop-up restaurants, kind of like the tailgating experience. And they'll just have like a lot more of the food atmosphere, social atmosphere before you head into the stadium for the game itself. And then on non-game days, so 345 days out of the year, the Grove will be open to the public in a variety of capacities depending on the season and the market demand for its use by patrons of the park, including an open-air restaurant, concession stand, equipment rental, ice skating rink, Friday jazz performance in the park, for example. And then also, the Grove may be used for private events like weddings, corporate outings, community events, and fundraisers as requested. And for those non-game days, it is us, the city, which decide those type of permits. And now to read for more about the Boston Public Schools and community proposed use. Quote, after the renovation and additions, White Stadium will continue to host BPS athletics and special events programs that currently use the stadium, including track and field, cheerleading, cross country, graduation, summer camps, and select football games. And that is really the big thing, that outside of people complaining about parking, The only additional thing that I also don't like has to do with that sentence right there, or that little passage, select football games. And to discuss this issue, yet again, they say banner, really being highlighted this episode. A piece by Yahoo Miller, December 20th, 2023. Over the decades, the stadium has been a mainstay of high school football and a place where many of the same schools continue their historic rivalries. Now, 74 years later, the high school football games may have to wait until the end of the season. In July, city officials, and now he kind of outlines the plan, which would allow a professional women's soccer team allowing for 20 games a year, March 16th through November 17th schedule, a time frame that includes the bulk of the high school football team's regular season schedule. During that time, football will not be allowed on the field. And the reason for that, continuing to read just from the piece, the team's ban on high school football games necessitated because the cleats used by football players would alter the texture of the turf, according to an article that appeared last week in the Boston Globe. And this has underscored a growing current of community concern about the leasing of a public facility to a private entity. Quote, students should be able to play on the home field, unquote, Fatima Ali Salam, chair of the Greater Mattapan Neighborhood Council. Quote, they can't just all of a sudden lose access. If we're giving away the rights to use a public facility, that's a problem. You can't put the needs of students behind that of a private team. In this loss of the ability to use the stadium for what I'll call the majority of the season is the worst part about this deal. Now, I get past it because of 2 points, or we'll say 2.5. That half being, they will still be able to use the stadium for football games, but it will just have to be much later in the season. So they would have to have some of their games on just different sites, and then you might just need to save some of the big title game matchups for when they can, again, embrace the new white stadium. So they'll still get to do it, maybe still get like to have the big championship games there, schedule the rivalry games until later in the season so they get to use that stadium for everything that it emotionally means for the community. I think we can get around that time period. So it's not like an absolute ban on it, though yes, I am kind of being nitpicking around that issue. But the two major points is that through this renovation, I believe more public programming will be possible. So even if we lose the public programming of the football games for 80% of the season, because of these renovations, much more public programming will be possible year-round. And so it'll be a net benefit in terms of students' access to the stadium, because we'll simply be able to use the stadium for more and more things, more and more different types of public programming. And to quote Michelle Wu, the number of hours that BPS students would be using the stadium for would more than triple under this plan. So while that particular student programming is decreasing its use, I believe that the renovation of the site will drastically increase Boston Public Schools children's access to this field, to this track, to the stadium. So I think it overall is a net positive for public access. And then finally, and this is a point that I'm sure people won't like, is the fact that it's a football child's program makes it a lot easier for me to swallow moving it, because if truth be told, we probably shouldn't be allowing children to play football. Now, I am not proposing that we right now pass a resolution to do that, but I think the science is overwhelmingly clear at how harmful short-term, long-term it is to people who participate in football. Like, we have the science. We know what CTE does. We know what those constant concussions do, that the sport of football is antithetical to long-term health. And so we really shouldn't be having children in these programs. Again, I'm not saying let's ban them, but if somebody did propose it, I would intellectually support it. But again, I'm still a brute. I'm still in the stadium or the Coliseum cheering for people just to beat the crap out of each other. I'm going to keep betting on football games, but if I ever had kids, absolutely not. They would not be playing football. So those are my rebuttals to what is, again, the largest negative of this proposal. Now, outside of the community concerns for the two issues that we just discussed, one being parking, the other being loss of this program, there has been one organization really championing the rejection of this proposal, and they are the ones behind the recent lawsuit. and they are the Emerald Necklace Conservancy. And I believe this is the first lawsuit they have ever filed. And there are two main reasons, and I'm just reading right from their own page, emeraldnecklace.org, White Stadium. However, the redevelopment, as proposed by the investors, should not move forward for two primary reasons. One, Franklin Park is protected open space and is protected by the Public Land and Protections Act, Article 97. This proposal should not move forward until a complete Article 97 process has occurred. Two, the process for redeveloping and expanding White Stadium has been rushed and has not provided the community with enough time to review and comment on the proposal. And to read from you a quote from Adrian Walker, February 21st of this year, again, I've referenced him multiple times. He, in his piece, cites how much he wants his renovation. Even he says, quote, "And the approval process has certainly been rushed. The proposal has already moved through a series of city reviews, exactly the kind of insider-driven fast-track process Wu has rallied against her entire career." When I talked to her Tuesday, Wu conceded that the project has been unusually speedy, driven by the need to be ready for the 2026 season. But she said she believes this is a generational opportunity and strongly defended her decision to ram it through. Quote, "We didn't know that this opportunity would come up for Boston," Wu said. "It was one of those unpredictable opportunities that arose because the NWSL decided to award expansion teams." For those of you who don't know, expansion teams are when a professional sports league wants to add new sports teams to it. We call those new sports teams expansion teams. They've made it clear that they aren't intending to add teams every single year. "It will be life-changing for our young people to have a women's professional team sharing their home." And I will give even more weight to the argument that this is moving too quickly. The lead person in charge of the Franklin Park Zoo, reading from a Dorchester Reporter article, February 7th, he says, quote, "We are not suggesting the renovations to White Stadium shouldn't happen," said Zoo New England president slash CEO John, I believe it's Linehan, in a six-page letter he sent to the BPDA. "However, the project could produce significant negative impacts on the area. These potential negative impacts have not been fully evaluated and require further study. Until these concerns are fully evaluated, approval for the BPDA would be premature. We ask the BPDA to defer consideration of the project until further studies have been conducted." Now, I can't speak to the impact this will have on the zoo animals. I don't know what that would be. To me, again, when we're talking about 20 days out of the year for like a four-hour period when you would have increased traffic to the game itself and then traffic out is very, very, very minimal. Again, 20 days out of the year for like a 4 to 5 hour period is not insurmountable in terms of traffic, in terms of parking, in terms of how it impacts the zoo. I just don't see it. And in a recent survey, the nearby residents support the project. So the preliminary survey from the Franklin Park Coalition, it's a nonprofit who aren't like the ones behind the project. So I can, in some way, I'm not going to go through the methodology. I don't got that kind of time. I'm just going to trust that they put this survey together in good faith. Of the more than 700 people who responded to the survey, and I'm reading from Nikki Griswold's article in the Globe on March 13th. Of the more than 700 people who responded to the survey from February 20th to March 8th, 32% were all for the project, 24% cautiously supported, 25% have some concerns, 20% outright oppose it. So it's close, but as general how polling works, you kind of just take right in the middle and you just add the two numbers before, two numbers after. That is 56% support, 45% have some negative or against it, with the all for it at 32% and the all against it at 20%. So that is a large margin for the people who really want it versus the people who outright oppose it. And these are the nearby residents. And to read more about this lawsuit, WBUR article, Seth Daniel, February 22nd. "Noting the Conservancy," and by that the Emerald Necklace, "supports a renovation of the stadium," she added, "rather than turning over the stadium to a private group of investors, we would like to focus on improving the stadium and the rest of Franklin Park with the funds the city has identified in true private philanthropy without strings attached." Mayor Michelle Wu fired back at the lawsuit and comments made to the media while visiting the Boston Children's Festival at the Boston Common Wednesday. Quote, to say this would be privatizing White Stadium is either a misunderstanding or a misrepresentation, she said. This would dramatically allow us to expand the number of usable hours for our student athletes and for the community, more than tripling the usage, and the professional teams would use 10% of those hours. I'm really excited what this represents for our city and our kids, and I'm determined to fight for every opportunity for them. And Wu goes on to reject the claims that we need to do that Article 97 process. And as somebody who has tried to fight developments in his own areas, I will just tell you that what I recognize is the same tactic. And I'm not criticizing the tactics they use. And those tactics being delay, delay, delay. And the primary reason why delaying in this circumstance works is, again, this sports league is trying to have an expansion team. It needs to meet a seasonal deadline. So if you can just delay this a little bit, then it's going to miss that deadline. And then they're going to just have to look elsewhere, maybe for another city, to be able to have this franchise. And so every little delay kills it. And it does give a little additional weight as to why this is being pushed forward at this speed, which is, again, something that I normally don't like. But for me, it is always, what is the development? I will use the same tactics to fight against developments I don't like unnecessarily increased lab space when we can't even fill the lab space that we've already grown. Great job over developing that market, BPDA. Or luxury condos. Again, another thing that we're oversaturated with. But a renovation of a stadium that has had, 50 years of decline, and all we have to give up is 20 days out of the season, a professional sports team, can we try to have a little fun in this city for once, is such a good deal to me. And to continue with Adrian Walker, he also wrote in a later piece, this being March 19th, quote, I don't really have a dog in the fight between the two community groups suddenly mirrored in a muted but strong dispute over the stadium. But after years of watching plans for White Stadium evaporate shortly after being floated, the prospect of another missed opportunity feels painful. For years, people have paid lip service to the stadium and the park in which it sits, while conditions have only deteriorated. This conflict pits against one another people of all profess to care deeply about White Stadium, as well they should, but it isn't enough to proclaim concern for the young people of Boston. It's time to give them what they deserve. And fortunately, in another bizarre union, I am in agreement with the judicial system. This piece, just a few days ago, March 22nd, court rules allowing White Stadium renovation project to proceed. Nick Stucchio, Boston Globe. Suffolk Superior Court Judge Sarah Wieland Ellis rejected a preliminary injunction sought by the Emerald Necklace Conservancy, a nonprofit that acts as a steward for the historic Franklin Park. In her ruling, Ellis wrote that pausing the project at its current stage would likely kill it, as the soccer group has the only respondent to the city's request for proposals to overhaul the White Stadium. This is the only proposal we got to do this. This would leave the facility in a state of deterioration and partial use, and the city may lose the opportunity to have its own professional women's sports team, Ellis wrote. Even if the defendants ultimately prevailed and the proposed project could proceed, any delay could result in rising costs associated with the proposed project, reducing the buying power of the $50 million the city has been allocated to the renovation. I don't even know if I spoke to that yet. It's basically a 50-50 deal, though I think I've also read there's a little less on their side otherwise, but just continuing to read from this article, they put it at Boston Unity Soccer Partners, which received approval from the National Women's Soccer League to establish the league's 15th team in Boston, intends to spend more than $50 million on the stadium renovation, in addition to the $50 million the city would contribute. So just using that as the most recent stat I have, it's a 50-50 split, literally. And I don't believe this ultimately kills all of a, prospective lawsuit, but this definitely weakens it. And just to bring back one of the residents who spoke about the traffic, Luis Elsa of the Garrison Trotter Neighborhood Association in Roxbury, said in a statement that the judge's ruling is similar to the U.S. Supreme Court's 1857 Dred Scott decision. Quote, wherein our rights as black citizens are not worthy of serious consideration or respect. Nothing has changed in Boston, Elsa said. And for the Emerald Necklace Conservancy, their response in a statement Friday evening, that it would be interested in a more affordable project, one that does not include housing a professional sports team or building luxury boxes, beer gardens, jumbotrons, and merchandise stores. Karen Marnie Prodrick, president of the Emerald Necklace Conservancy, urged the city in a statement to abandon the project, which she described as a flawed privatization scheme that is not supported by a single neighborhood association. Though, as this article immediately follows, a survey by the Franklin Park Coalition found the majority of area residents either enthusiastically or cautiously support the renovation project. And as we close, I just want to read from you an exchange that happened on this issue March 7th. Dorchester Reporter by Seth Daniels. And I believe this takes place during like one of the court proceedings before the judge made their ruling. Outside in the hallway afterwards, parties clashed on different viewpoints, and public relations professionals from both sides rushed to get their points of view in front of members of the media. At one point, Boston Public Schools cross-country coach Haitman John Lewis teed off on those suing the city and Boston Unity. Quote, "Not anyone here looks like any of the kids in the district," he said, exasperated. "It's one side. Who spoke with the kids and what they need? Suing the city is hindering White Stadium and the future of Boston. The people making these decisions, do they look like BPS? I don't see it." That comment drew the ire of Carla Lise Kaliga and other community members attached to the lawsuit who were gathered in the hall, and a yelling match ensued. "I'm a BPS parent with multiple kids, and I'm going to tell you something. They have $50 million," said Kaliga. "I'm here to serve the kids," said John Lewis, the track coach. "We're trying to help the kids," said another litigant. "When?" exclaimed the coach. "Now," said Kaliga. "Where have you been the last 10 years?" asked John Lewis. "The city kids don't know who you are." "I'm telling you, you were fighting the wrong people," said Kaliga. But just that element from what the cross-country coach stated, "Not anyone here looks like any of the kids in the district." Quote, "The people making these decisions, do they look like BPS?" And this is just going to be my open general statement about the Emerald Necklace Conservancy and the people who tend to navigate towards those types of organizations, things kind of like historic preservation societies, things like that. And this is a sweeping generalization, and really there was nothing in the Emerald Necklace Conservancy, like their history, that I was able to find that makes them like this negative force. However, they are ultimately a conservative, like low C conservative force. And for some elements, particularly around like protecting wildlife, greenlands, parks, those are fantastic. Those are crucial. However, they are also used to stop really any development, any progress of an area that alters how they enjoy using the space. Not what's necessarily in the overall public's interest of the space or the future use for the public in this space, but instead what they like the parks to be used for. And for a lot of people who are, again, members of this not just this particular organization, but organizations like this, they like quiet. They like tranquility. They want to be able to go on a walk unencumbered by any inconvenience that you might find in urban areas. And while this is literally 20 days out of the year for like a 5-hour period, that is already too much, because it alters how they like the space to be used. And particularly the people who comprise the membership of organizations like this tend to be whiter and wealthier. And I have to say it again, I have nothing against this organization at all. But ultimately, I think the lawsuit rings hollow. And I think the primary concerns that the opposition have to this project is not about a soccer team using it for 20 days out of the year, but instead a fully renovated stadium, which might just attract more people throughout the year. And they don't want that. They want parking spots. They want easy flow of traffic if they want to drive around. That is ultimately their primary concerns. They want to go on a long walk of the Emerald Necklace and not have to interact with that many people. And I'm sorry, those priorities are going to be second for increased public use, which ultimately I view this as being an increased public use and, my God, maybe just a little bit of life and fun in this city. And so in closing, I still support this project. I am more than happy to have a conversation with people if you would like to have a debate, even though, I mean, that might be a little bit of a strong stance, but if you would like to outline your concerns to me and you're a member of one of these organizations, more than happy to have you on in a good-spirited, good faith conversation around this project. But from everything I have read, I am for it. And just one final note on this is the opposition, again, not including the Emerald Necklace Conservancy, not including the local neighbors who have problems with like the traffic and the parking, is that any big initiative that Michelle puts forward, there is a reaction against simply because they do not like her and do not want her to succeed. And so almost kind of like how liberals fell into anything that Trump says, well, the opposite must be good. There is a notable number of people that I see that if Michelle Wu is behind it, they are against it just by reflex. And no one encapsulates this in the media better than Joan Vinucci. I'm just going to add the Italian accent, who she hates Michelle. And you can just see it oozing out of every piece she writes. But on this particular issue, March 18th, Globe, Mayor Wu plays hardball over White Stadium soccer deal. And she outlines how Michelle Wu basically said that if this program, this project falls through, well, then the $50 million that the city is also putting up, we're going to use it for something else because it's only going to be half. With Jones saying, quote, but what's really driving it? The needs of student athletes or the pros? And then after discussing Mayor Michelle Wu saying that the city won't propose or won't continue with half the renovation if it doesn't get the other half of financing, Joan writes, that's hardball. But is it hardball on behalf of the public or hardball on behalf of a private entity? But this fight is about something bigger than legal issues. It's about Wu's vision for the city and how she executes it. The suit pits Wu against the old Boston establishment. To some degree, it puts the old Boston Globe against the new one. Ben Taylor, whose family owned the Globe until its sale to the New York Times in 1993, chairs the Emerald Necklace Conservancy Board. Jumping forward, with White Stadium, Wu also has a bold idea, but she didn't first build a broad constituency for it. Ending with the sentence, for that, Wu must be willing to put the kids first, not the pros. And so it is very much wrapped up in people angry at how Michelle Wu operates as mayor. And while I have shared in that anger for different elements of what she's done, most notably how she completely eroded the ballot initiative, which was supposed to give more power to the city council involving budgets, I think that has very much long-term detrimental harm to the city. However, as I normally always mention during those, is that she is using executive power the way basically every mayor ever has and as a way that I would generally advise her to, with the asterisk being some of those longer term ramifications. And Adrian Walker also picks up on this. And he writes in that piece that I mentioned earlier, where it sounds like he ends up supporting the project, quote, she's been accused of playing hardball. I think that's a direct shot at Joan. As if that isn't what effective mayors do. And he also, you know, gets to that contrast that she is operating how Walsh did, most notably how Menino did, which makes sense because she came from like the Menino school. And there was just this conservative element in Boston that hates how she is acting like these leaders of the past. That needs to be stated in this conversation. And so with that, I hope you enjoyed the episode. And if you did, and you would like more of this type of coverage of Boston, of Massachusetts, of the politics, of the drama, the best way to not just find all of my work, but to support it, is patreon.com/bostopianews. Thank you to everyone who's already become a Patreon member. All of my content is free. And so you are truly one of the angels in the spirit of the angel from the garden that I referenced earlier. And just giving me a little bit of money each month to show your support and to demonstrate to others the value of not just this program, but of truly independent media. So thank you. And if you found this episode helpful, want to hear more, want to support the work, you can again do so. patreon.com/bostopianews. Bottom tier is just buying me a cup of coffee a month as a thank you. or, you know, a beer or a lunch, should you be so inclined. But if you can't afford it, I understand that. Just sharing the podcast forward to people that you think might be interested, that also goes a long way. And with that, take care. And as always, I hope you have a great rest of your day.